From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Had we actually been able to do the census this week, I was just so eager, and then I was just waiting and waiting and waiting like the rest of Australia, just so I could put down as occupation board game reviewer.
I know. I tried it too.
Yep.
Not podcaster.
We can dream, can't we?
Well, I guess we can't call ourselves a podcast when we can't get a podcast episode out. Anyway,
despite our best intentions and the best efforts of Edge Radio as well, who we love. Hello.
Hello, we are the Dice Men Cometh here for episode 129 on the 11th of August 2016. I'm Mark.
I'm Trent.
I'm Garth.
And Garth, what is coming up on the show this evening?
Well, we are talking, more specifically, you guys are talking about what you've been playing this week, which is possibly the heaviest game that you have ever played in physical weight, because I watched a video of our friend Tony Menzi, and it was almost 9 kilos, apparently.
The others.
How many sins in that?
7.
Okay. We will also do a Gen Con recap, because Trent, you weren't at Gen Con.
So I'm completely qualified to talk about the world's biggest board gaming convention, which I wasn't at.
Well, indeed.
When everyone was talking about Gen Con, first thing I thought it was you, Trent.
And then we are going to talk about iOS, because I have a smartphone. And
a toilet.
Exactly. And then we will do something about a competition.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think we're running a contest.
We'll run a competition. We'll tell people how they can win stuff. All that and more on The Dice Men Cometh. All right, well, that was Mark Lanigan and PJ Harvey with Hit the City on The Dice Men Cometh. That's Edge Radio 99.3. Now, who amongst you is good enough and holy enough to be able to talk us through the 7 deadly sins, or more importantly, the others? The 7 sins that you guys have played this weekend.
Well, I think all of us have got a reasonable familiarity with the 7 deadly sins.
Mm.
The others? Well, we've played it once.
Yes. We have, and I think we should talk about it, Trent. There's a bit to talk about. Garth, we'll fill in as we go.
Thank you.
The others, of course, 7 sins. Published in 2016 by Cool Mini or Not, designed by the great mini designer of our age. Not that he designs the actual minis, but he designs games with the minis. That's Eric Lang, and if you've seen him in a video, what a dude he is.
He's kind of like a cool version of Moss from the IT Crowd.
That's a good description, actually.
So it is cool as, you know, a board game designer, actually.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Well, he's awesome facial hair.
I was going to say, he's pretty cool as far as board game designers go. So this is a survival horror game. Set in, well, it's not post-apocalyptic. The world stands on the brink of apocalypse as the fanatics of the Hell Club have summoned the 7 deadly sins to lay waste to our reality. Slowly the others have crept into our lives, corrupting society from within. The city of Haven is the key to their invasion, but it will not go down without a fight.
It's basically, you know, the BPRD from Hellboy. It's the government agency fighting monsters.
It all sounds really unique.
Fresh and original.
That's right, and you've got the organization known as Faith, the Federal Authority for the Interdiction of Transdimensional Horrors.
Sounds like somebody really wanted to make an acronym out of FAITH.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's the others is one of those one versus many games. So you've got one player controlling the forces of one of the sins. You only take on one of the sins at a time. Against all the other players, they have a team of 7 heroes. You only have as many as the number of heroes that are actually in the room on the board at a time, but your maximum total team, in other words, how many players, how many characters you can lose.
It's like you've got a bench 7 of heroes, isn't
it? Correct.
So you, when you die, then you just...
Which you do.
Take the next hero off the bench and go, your heroes, I'm now...
Yeah, they're kind of disposable, and so you just bring the next one out.
Yeah, so the heroes are all cooperating to survive the Sin attack and accomplish the mission. And there are four different types of heroes. So you've got your leader, of course, and usually there's only one of those because there's no I in team.
We love the leader.
And they generally have an ability that helps the other players. You've got bruisers. They're your melee fighters. You've got snipers, which have your guns, your distance shooters.
Well, they're just called shooters, aren't they?
Shooters, yeah. They are, right. That's right.
Yeah. And you've got... nice and simple.
Yeah, that's right. And then you've got your fixers. They, according to this, have the resourcefulness and knowledge of the occult necessary to resolve supernatural crises that spread through the city.
And what that actually means is just a bunch of tokens on the board that you've got to walk up next to, roll a dice, and yeah.
That's right. So you've got this mix of heroes. They've all got their own stats and unique abilities, how many dice they throw for battle, how many dice they throw for getting rid of tokens, how much defense they have. Now, they say this sets them apart, but at first, this comes to one of the first faults that we discovered in the game, which is that they're not all different. Mm. In fact, they've got a special ability each, but then on your hero card, you've got these, I think it's about seven different little abilities that you trigger by moving along your corruption level. So your base level, you take some voluntary corruption to give yourself an extra boost. Now, of course, what we discovered was all these boosts are all in exactly the same order on your board, where they could have changed them up really well and taken that opportunity to give much more player customization.
It's one of the, well, frankly, few interesting and original mechanics that are in this game, this dual track. We won't go into agonizing detail about it now, but it's a dual track of health and corruption. The more corruption you sacrifice, the more abilities you can access, but the more health you take, the less so choice.
But you get more powerful, but you get closer to being corrupt and bad yourself.
That's it. And every single character in the game has exactly the same progression of abilities, which just seems like a little bit of a wasted opportunity in this game, in a game that's supposed to be all about customization and variability.
Yeah, now the Sin player, on the other hand, you've got access to all... You've got the one Sin, so you've obviously got seven choices if you've got all the expansions. So you have the one Sin with a massive big avatar, and then you've got Abominations, which are your, sort of your base level monsters. In the game we played, we had Corrupted Hobos. You've got a controller who's like a mini boss, and as I said, you've got this massive big avatar. So these monsters, they might be trying to kill the heroes, they might just be trying to slow them down, depending on what the mission is. The Sin player also then has a deck of Sin cards that are giving him special little abilities that he can play while the others are...
special little abilities? Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God!
While the players are playing. And the nice thing, I guess, is they're tied to the type of Sin. So, example, we had Pride, for example, was the Sin that we fought Trent. Who would have thought?
Was it?
And so part of with playing against the Sin of Pride was whenever you went out by yourself because you thought you were good enough, you actually suffered a negative effect.
Okay.
So, you know, that was bringing Pride in. So each Sin brings different mechanics and different special bad things that happen to the characters, and heroes have to deal with them, you know, to get into the mission. Now, there are seven different stories, and these are in the missions. Now, there's no overarching campaign, but there are terror stories, which are really focused on action and combat. There are corruption stories, where you're trying to save the city from corruption, but generally that means the heroes are going to become more corrupt. You've got redemption stories, which are saving people in the city. And you've got... There's another one.
And these are just the missions that you're trying to... accomplished.
Yeah, yeah, that's
accompanied
right.
With appropriate flavor tests.
Yeah, and no different boards set up. Most of these, you've got two or three ways you can set the boards up for each one. And each of the Sin expansions has these seven stories presented in a different way. So there's multiple ways to produce the sort of the same seven stories.
So let me just get this straight, because I didn't play this, so I don't know.
Mm.
You can buy this game and not have the seven sins, is that right? Okay. You can have the others a singular sin?
No, so two sins came with the base game.
Okay.
So in the box, and one set of heroes.
Okay.
And then they had expansions or Kickstarter stretch goals.
Because you guys played the Kickstarter version where basically it had been backed to the nth degree.
We saw Leon's pictures on Facebook of the Kickstarter delivery when it fulfilled. And it just this massive, massive set of boxes.
Yep.
Mostly full of air, it's got to be said.
There's got to be a fair bit of plastic in
there, around some very, very nice plastic miniatures, yeah.
Yeah, so just get to the end of how the game actually works, and then we'll talk about some of the expansions. So as the game progresses, and depending on how badly the heroes are going in different sort of plot points along the story, you also have the Apocalypse Track. And as the Apocalypse Track moves down, the sins get different special abilities, and the Sin Controller gets access to Apocalypse cards, which do more bad things.
And basically, by the end of the Apocalypse Track, that isn't the end of the game, but by that point, there's so much bad stuff happening all the time that it may as well be.
Fair enough.
So basically, I mean, it's in a nutshell, it's quite a simple action selection game where on your turn, you can move and you can take an action, and then you can take a free action to activate a city space if you haven't already done that.
Well, it sounds kind of like Descent Seven Sins.
From
this explanation.
It shares some of the same...
I mean, you've got the 1v4 bad guy versus the hero mechanic.
Shares some of the same DNA, yeah. I suppose, but okay. It's less about that... modular tile, you know, the grid and lining up line of sight and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The spaces are quite broad and general, which was something I actually found a bit frustrating in it. Look, in case it's not sort of fairly apparent, I actually thought this was overblown a merry trash tripe. I mean, it was a huge success on Kickstarter because of the miniatures.
Yes.
And the miniatures are lovely. The rest of it I just thought was frankly a real letdown, including like the single biggest criticism I've got is just the art reproduction. The colour is just very flat and muddy throughout all of it. And for a game that's so meant to be so glossy and have such high production values, the whole thing just looks muddy and bland.
So you're talking about the tiles, the
bits of card that you've got representing the players and the various characters and stuff. Yeah, just really all flat looking. Nothing popped.
Yeah, look, I mean, for me there were some novel aspects. I mean, one of the characters, you had the character of Carl, who was a man. Who one of his powers was he could turn into a werewolf, and there was a little overlay that you had.
And he lasted less than one turn. And I then ended up with the chick who had the whip arms, who was the fixer character.
Yeah.
And the fixer characters are really underpowered in this. Well, I thought there was a real lack of balance between the heroes.
I think the issue with that perhaps, Trent, was so in our scenario, we were playing against Pride, as I said, and we had sort of four objectives we had to achieve. Now, after we achieved objective one, which was do a certain number of upgrades, we then got to make a choice about whether we would focus on killing monsters or on clearing the city of corruption and tokens.
You can actually choose your goals as you're going through.
So we could pick, and we picked the killing monsters, basically.
Of course you did.
Because we figured, well, you've got to clear the monsters out to get to the tokens anyway, so we might as well go for the monsters. And, of course, the issue with the fixers is that type of character is set up to be the token-clearing character to do that stuff and not so much to fight. So the mission we played was all about fighting, and so the fixers didn't play much of a role. Having said that, though, Trent, who administered the coup de grace?
Yeah, I mean, I did win the game.
That's right. Yeah, with your fixer.
That's right, yeah. I mean, I was sort of carrying along everybody else through the game, as I want to do.
So, look, I mean, I liked the fact that it was relatively rules light, so it wasn't your typical, and not that this is a Fantasy Flight game, but it wasn't your typical Fantasy Flight overblown mess where the rules, you struggle to get through the rules to get it to the table. There were some rules we needed to clarify, but it was relatively simple. I really like the burst mechanism, and obviously we had a long chat about how the burst mechanism worked and whether you were limited by the physical number of dice.
I think the burst mechanism in this game is broken.
Frankly, I really liked it.
Because the way I read it, you could roll a potentially infinite number of dice.
Oh, okay.
I love that because it gives that unpredictability. Like, I'm going into this fight, the odds are against me, but if I roll crazily, I have six dice and I could get 10 hits.
And this is backed by the fact that when you buy expansions, they come with dice.
Yeah.
All right? And I just think it's bad news.
So I guess, you know, as someone who hasn't played this game, and a lot of people have backed this game and haven't received it yet, is it all about the minis and people who paint them are going to love it and the game is ho-hum? Is it something that you would go out and say the Sins play differently, do you think, enough to warrant getting expansions?
Well, I think from having a look, because obviously we played one of the base Sins and we played the base set of characters. Now, if you got all the Kickstarters like Leon did, then you ended up with the seven different Sins that seem to play quite differently. And then you also end up with, I think there's Alpha Team, Beta Team, Gamma Team, Delta Team,
Dopey and Bashful,
Sons of Ragnarok, and the Men of Faith. So there's like six different hero packs.
And you have to play as those as a team, or can you pick and choose?
I think it's so, because that's like your team of seven.
Sure.
But if you look at that, you've got seven Sins and you've got, what, five or six teams of heroes. Then you've got the seven or eight
missions
in each set. There's a massive amount of replayability.
And look, I would be interested in playing it again with something, a completely different set of elements.
Yeah.
But honestly, I don't think anybody's going to be talking about this game in a year's time. In a hobby where we've got so many things competing to get to a table for a second play to see, gee, did I really like that or did I really hate it like I thought I did? This isn't going to be high on my list of priorities.
Yeah, see, I think you just got to look at the number of people who are backing these Kickstarters.
That just means the miniatures are pretty. That's
right. I think what it means
people
is
people get sucked in by the cheddar.
There is a whole group of people out there that just play this type of games. Your Blood Rage and this and your Zombie Side and all that.
Yeah,
and
sure.
And for someone like that, there's so much. I mean, you could play this game for a year and not run out of variety.
Look, I suppose if you were turning 13 and 14 and you hadn't played... No, I'm serious. And you hadn't played Descent, okay, and this was the first thing that your mum got you for Christmas or whatever, one, I'd be maybe calling child support. but why not as a first game? But gee, you can do a lot better than this.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think for people who like these type of games, and I was comparing it to Fireteam Zero in that it's, you know, it's a very survival horror. I like this. It had a bit less clunkiness in the rules. As I said, I'd like to play it a couple more times with different sets and see if the experience is different. Because if you found that, regardless of the amount of replayability, it all seemed very samey. Perhaps that's a shame. The minis you've got to say in this are fantastic. And look, a huge shout out to friend of the show, Tony Menzi. You might recognize him. He's the person that says, "The Dice Man cometh" at the start of every show. And he has produced a series of unboxing videos that are the rage of the internet at the moment, basically because he's the first one to get them out there.
The rage of the internet.
He has done... he must be getting close to 10,000 views of his videos. There's about 16 different ones. He's actually going to produce, because he filmed us playing, a playthrough video with us. It should be out in the next week or so, so keep an eye out for that. But look, if you're interested in this game, check out his unboxings. Check out that playthrough when it comes out. It'll really, really give you a good feel for the game. Yeah, it's definitely one where if you're into this sort of game, I reckon you're going to love it. If you're not, you probably should steer clear. And I reckon that's about all I've got to say. We'll come back. We'll talk about iOS, Gen Con, and...
maybe the competition?
A competition!
The Greats are Burning Bridges on the Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio, 99.3 FM with Mark, Trent and Garth. I understand, mate, Garth, your parents are making their annual pilgrimage to stay with you at the moment, a couple of weeks with Your folks living at your place?
Isn't it lovely?
So you've been spending a lot of time in the toilet lately.
Very much so.
So what's the latest on iOS board games, please, from Garth?
Well, thank you for such a lovely introduction. And hello, Mum and Dad, if you're listening. Which not, but that's okay. I'm going to talk about two games on iOS. And thank you very much for the soundtrack. However, I will also, at the end, talk about a couple of things that were announced in Gen Con, because although people think that Gen Con is all about cardboard, there's actually some people there with electronic devices showing off the hotness, and yeah, it might go in quite nicely with your Gen Con update as well, Trent.
Okay.
But anyway, before we get into the world of what it's like to be a beta or beta tester for a very exciting app.
What's that?
It is Sushi Go.
Oh, really?
By... we'll say friend of the show, Phil Walker-Harding, by association. You know, Adventureland Games. This version is the GameRight Games version that so many of us have in that beautiful little tin box. However, I put my name forward to say I want to be a tester. Should I say beta or beta? What would you prefer?
Beta sounds kind of more sci-fi.
More sci-fi? Yeah. Okay, fantastic. So I was a beta tester.
Rhymes with data.
And in the last 2 weeks...
When you say beta, I just think Betamax.
Well, it's the way of the future.
Sure.
Yeah, and Leisure Disc. So anyway, last couple of weeks, I've been a...
Hello to anybody who's under the age of 40 who's listening to the show.
I was a tester. I'm just not even going to say beta or beta. Now, this app has been designed by Lummox Labs, which sounds really, really highfalutin. They're basically a bunch of devs who used to work for Button Mash Games, who released the very successful and very beautiful ports of Forbidden Island and Forbidden Desert games. So a little bit of credential there. Now, it's essentially this one guy called Michael Bushiken, who is working on the Sushi Go app. And he has been fantastic in releasing really regular updates for this beta version of it, because I'm downloading it every couple of days and I've got this secret code to be able to go in and go and look at it, which is great. However, the main thing about this app, which is iOS only, Mark, I hate to break it to you, is that it's looking really, really good. From the game point of view, it is very easy to play, and I'm very impressed with the level of simple, intuitive tutorial that it offers. Because I had a chat a couple of weeks ago, a month ago, about Castles of Mad King Ludwig versus Suburbia, and neither of them really hit the nail on the head with their tutorial. Mm. And they're quite complicated games in the scoring mechanisms and how that all works. Now, the good thing about something like Sushi Go is it's not necessarily a complicated game. However, trying to think of a way where you can explain in a tutorial version how it works is something that is not necessarily easy, because you're basically taking the drafting mechanic that a lot of us know and distilling it down into virtually a kid's game
but
version
with an app,
of it.
You can do it graphically, can't you?
Well, you can, but you can also, you want to maintain attention because you want someone to be able to pick it up and play straight away.
Yep.
So another good thing about this is that you can do that straight away, because once you've opened the app for the very first time, and I have to say that obviously things can change and it is not the final version, but as soon as you open the app, it encourages you to do the tutorial. Once you've done it, it doesn't appear anymore. So it's learnt that you've done the tutorial. Do you want to go and play a game? Well, yes, I do. It gives you the option at the moment to play versus 1 to 4 opponents. So you get to play up to 5 players. Now they are robot opponents. Or you can go and play through the game center that's on your iOS device and play with real humans when this game is released for the general public. So I really, really like the fact that you can basically watch a tutorial that goes for 2 minutes, get into the game, and just start having fun, because this game plays really, really quick.
2 minutes. Who's got 2 minutes anymore?
I have 2 minutes. You should spend it playing Sushi Go instead of the others if it was that disappointing.
That's,
you know,
probably not a bad idea. Now, so, can I ask, as a beta man,
yes,
as we've come to know you,
Thank you.
What do you have to provide to the Sushi Go people, Lummox Labs? Some feedback, I assume?
Yeah,
feedback. Some scores or something?
Well, yeah, the good thing is about it all being electronically is that just sucks the data from the game that I'm playing anyway. All right.
You email them or something?
Yep, like that? Yep, email them and say, I had this issue or this doesn't make sense. And you're basically having that two-way conversation because Michael is also sending regular email updates to say, hey, I'm going to have another version of this released. And in this version, there is blah, 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 blah.
Cool.
Make sure it works. So that's really cool. It's going to be coming out relatively soon. It looks good. It's got the same style of cutesy art that people like. I think it'll be very kid friendly, and I'll probably do a little bit of a talk about it when it's released and everyone else can have a look.
So it's interesting then that the testers don't have to give any feedback to the testees.
Sure. But we do. We give feedback all the time, and we're going back and forth testing each other's systems, making sure that we can play together in the game center. So everything is working very well.
I thought
I'd retain some level of professionalism. Now, next game I'm going to talk about is a bit of an oldie, but potentially a goodie. And I'm talking about Elder Sign Omens. Yeah. Now, Elder Sign has been out for a long, long time in the cardboard version since 2011 by Fantasy Flight. Now, Elder Sign is basically the distilled down version of Arkham, which, 6-7 hours, a long, long, long time if you've got it, and probably has been replaced by Eldritch now for almost
everybody. It was initially sold that way, Garth, because I was one of the people who had Arkham Horror, could never get the 7 hours to get it to the table, because you do get lost in that multi-dimensional gate while you're playing it, and thought, oh, it's been distilled down into like 90 minutes, 2 hour game, fantastic.
But
Elder Sign is not the distillation of Arkham Horror. Elder Sign is Cthulhu Yahtzee, let's just face it.
Yeah, and that's why it lends itself really well to an app, because rather than being a 90-minute game, it can be played in about 10 or 15 minutes. Screen size is not an issue on your iPhone or your iPad or your iPod or your Android devices, because it is multi-platform, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I did play this one when it first came out, and I spent a lot of time playing it, actually.
And it has the same really cool Lovecraftian art and the theme. Look, for what it's worth, I think they do a really good job of trying to instill a bit more theme onto it, because it has really nice cutscenes in the app. It tells you when you lose, and you will lose, that you have been devoured, and that's really cool. So it's got really nice credentials in that regard.
Yeah, they create a bit of atmosphere with creepy music and things like that.
Exactly. Now, the good thing is,
just imagining hearing all this from the other side of the toilet door. Sorry, please continue.
Cthulhu! So look, it came out a couple of years ago now. It is basically compatible with anything above an iPhone 3. So, you know, most of you humanity should all be able to do it. But it's basically you select your team of investigators, you explore a museum, and basically by exploring, you go to various rooms. And in each room, you have to, as Mark said, roll the right symbols on the dice to be able to pass these tests to ultimately get the elder signs that you were trying to chase to ultimately, hopefully, beat the big bads before the doom track gets to a certain number and all humanity is lost. So I really, really enjoyed this app. I think it looked really nice on iPad, which is the platform I've been playing it on. I've got one of the older iPads, I think only a generation 2 however old that is. And it still worked a treat.
Yeah.
So I was really impressed with that. The main difference is it doesn't have any of the ally cards that you would have found in the game, so it's removed that aspect of it. And it's also made the midnight parts of the game where something bad always happens at midnight a little bit worse to make the game run a bit quicker as So a couple of quick things. You can do 3 potential in-app purchases, which are $4.50 each. The game itself is $6. I think on the Android store it's only $5.50. So there you go, Google saving you money. I really enjoyed this game. And then I just wanted to quickly talk about a couple of things that came out electronically for Gen Con. Lots of talk about the Through the Ages app that is going to be coming out.
Oh my God, they've turned that into an app.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
That's going to be pretty impressive. They are still talking about a 2016 release. However, some people think that may not happen. Cool Mini or not, They're going to be releasing a Zombicide app, so the people that would love the others may be very, very interested in that.
Why bother, honestly?
The people at Atlas Games are talking about Gloom, which is a game that I really, really don't particularly like. However, they were talking about it because it's also on Kickstarter. It's currently not looking like it's going to fund, so that would be really, really interesting.
Talk about why bother, Gloom. I mean, why bother even with the card game, let alone with a PC or iOS adaption.
These things have their followings.
Indeed. So, and lastly, before you go to your Gen Con stuff after a song, Trent, Fantasy Flight, after the success of their Descent Road to Legend app that came out and basically removed the Overlord, they are going to offer the same thing for Imperial Assault in 2017.
Not surprisingly. There we go.
But that will be awesome. I can't wait for that because Imperial Assault is a fantastic game. But that's all I got.
And they did announce, obviously, just before Gen Con, the new version of Mansions of Madness.
So this is the way it's going, right? So there's no more Overlord role, which actually, I got to say, makes me a little bit sad.
I just think they're given options because a lot of people, and Mark is one of them, doesn't like being that one against four. So it just means that Mark will play the games a bit more because it's going to be all of us against the game.
I look forward to listening to Mark tell the app what to do.
Oh, Smudge with Devan. You are with the Edge. The Edge Men? No. Oh, see what happens when I have a week off? You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Now, from my electronic Gen Con update to Trent's old school box and dice cardboard version.
Oh, yeah.
Over to you.
Yeah, Gen Con, recently held in Indianapolis from the 4th to the 7th of August. Gen Con number 49.
Wow.
It was. This event grew out of a little meeting in the home of one Gary Gygax.
Oh, Lake Geneva. Really?
Just a little gathering of friends.
Mark would have only been, what, 5 or 10 first happened?
The event has obviously grown considerably. This year, over 500 exhibitors, over 16,000 different events.
Yeah.
I think that what they're doing is, like, they're counting, we're having an organized board game session at this time. They're counting that as an event when they add that up. And as I say, held in Indianapolis every year. Looked like Gen Con's threat last year to leave Indianapolis over the passing of the religious freedom laws didn't amount to much because money talks, and you know the rest of that. Of course, we watch this massive, massive event unfold from the other side of the planet every year. How much would it cost someone in Australia to actually get there? Garth, you're a travel agent in your spare time.
I am, yes. So, look, the thing is, airfares from Australia to the USA have never been cheaper.
Well, let's assume, because we know what the dates are for next year
already,
and we know where it is. Mm-hmm. So if I book now...
Well, you can't book now.
Oh, okay.
But if you booked in about a month to 6 weeks' time, then you would be reasonably expecting to get airfares, say, for around about the $1,500 mark.
Okay.
From East Coast Australia, and probably not too much different from West Coast.
Accommodation.
Yeah, accommodation.
Meals, you add another grand onto that.
Easy, yeah. And I mean, you can also say the same kind of thing for Essen, because Essen's coming up in October.
Right.
And I've been very fortunate to be able to assist some board gamers to be able to get to Essen.
Is that right?
Yeah. And look, it's as long as it's planned and prepared for...
But that's your annual holiday,
isn't
it?
It is your holiday because you're spending 24 hours getting in a plane in each direction. So there's 2 days gone just travelling there and back, not to mention the jet lag that's going to happen.
Yeah, and if you're going to spend that amount of money, you may as well see some of Germany, some of...
Indeed.
...the sights of Indianapolis.
Either way, you're looking at somewhere in the couple of grand vicinity to get a person there.
Well, look, if only we knew maybe, say, a couple of podcasters who do a gaming podcast out of Indianapolis, maybe we could spread out our sleeping bags on their studio floor.
Save a bit of money.
The spiel, maybe, if you're listening.
Well, my question is it worth it? All right, because what do you really get out of attending an event like this? Right? And being one of the 60-odd thousand people who turned up this year over the 4 days.
Yeah,
I reckon... 60,000. Massive crowds.
You get a hell of a lot of fun and not much sleep.
Look, I think, They're not just big crowds, they're also competitive crowds. You've got to line up. If there's something you've got your eye on, you've got to get in line first and be prepared to line up for hours.
Well, not just that, but you've got to book online.
Yep.
A lot of things like what's like the live action role playing thing that they do there every
year? True Dungeon.
True Dungeon.
Yeah.
You know, like it sells out on the first day that it goes live.
An event like this is also a nightmare for people with social phobia or anxiety issues, or those of us who are on the autism spectrum. A lot of board gamers are.
I was going to say, lucky there's not many of those in our hobby.
Okay. Well, look no, I'm being quite serious. That's quite a challenging environment for some people. We can't. The only thing in Australia that we can compare this to is PAX. Okay, and the attendance figures for PAX have never officially been released. We're guessing it's somewhere between 50,000 to 75,000, though, but they haven't released it, so we don't know. But look, I think it's fair to say that the Gen Con would be taking PAX up another notch. Of course, PAX is really mostly about video games. This is all board gaming, RPGing, card gaming. But yes, there are those special events that do make it worth attending if you're right into it, including True Dungeon, which this year had its own separate stadium.
Wow.
There was a tunnel from the main hall that you travelled into a whole other stadium.
Did you have to
play.
Fight your way along it?
Oh my God. At the end of the first day, more than $24,000 worth of Magic cards had been sold. Exploding Kittens and the people who made that were there. They had branded urinal cake covers in the toilets, which I think is really perfect for a game I'd like to piss all over. And of course, there's lots of game publishers offering a lot of merchandise to attendees ahead of official release in order to help build up hype and advanced buzz, I suppose. Although it must be said, it's generally the smaller companies who seem to be doing that, like Fantasy Flight, or Wizards of the Coast. They're not going to be doing that. They're not going to be offering pre-release deals. They've got marketing departments. They don't need to create that buzz. In the photos I've seen, I did get all a bit girly excited over the upper deck, the upper deck card stand, because they had it all done up in a Big Trouble in Little China theme.
Oh yeah, right? This is your game.
I know. Look, I don't even think the game looks that great, honestly. But they had a real truck done up as Jack Burton's Pork Chop Express. And I was like, but look, I'm not going to go through. I mean, you can't possibly. Leon tried and didn't even get halfway through the list of games that he was interested in. I've managed to narrow it down to 5 games.
Excellent.
That have been talked about from Gen Con this year that I am looking forward to.
All right.
Number one, and I think this probably goes without saying, Seafall.
Yes.
From Plat Hat Games. Now, it had a limited release at Gen Con. It will be officially released in September. The pre-release sold out in nothing flat, of course. I think it's fair to say this is the most hotly anticipated game of the year. It's almost a cliche to say that we're looking forward to playing it. It applies the legacy function of evolving gameplay and changing your writing on your board and tearing up cards and opening up packets and envelopes and things. And it applies that to a colonial-themed world of sail battles and adventure and discovery. There's a little bit more that we've seen now in videos and photos, and it just looks lovely.
Yeah, well, I tried to, but the Dice Tower put out those, in my humble opinion, ridiculous 360-degree video reviews that they were putting out, which are basically designed for people with the VR goggle sets.
Okay.
And I tried to watch those and went, nah, I can get as far as 30 seconds in and no chance. But look, yeah, having the very first, from the ground up, legacy game.
Yeah, that's
it was created to be a legacy game. It's not a covering over of a risk or pandemic. Understandably, it is going to be a big thing in our hobby. I've pre-ordered it, so I'm hoping that it's going to be awesome and that it lives up to the hype, because it should be amazing.
Yeah.
Number four, Captain Sonar from Matago. This looks like a cross between Battleship and Space Cadets.
Oh.
You guys remember Space Cadets?
Yeah.
All right, which was basically 8 people in a room yelling at each other.
Yeah.
So it's teams operating opposing submarines.
Oh, yeah.
And this is teams of up to, like, 4 or 5 people on each team, isn't it?
Calling orders out to each other to do things like lay mines, fire torpedoes.
Or one ping only, Vasily.
That's it. all using magic erasable markers on plastic sheets, which you know, is a very obvious thing which there should be more of in games, I think. You know, you wipe the texters off afterwards. I have a copy of Space Cadets. Doesn't come out very often. It's a lot of pressure to play. I'm hoping this is a little bit of a refinement of it that makes it a little bit easier.
So do you think it is it one of those like multiple mini games, or is there much talk about what it actually involves? Because that was the thing I found with Space Cadets, is really you're all doing your own little thing. Even though they contribute to the group feel, you're all doing your own little mini game.
It seems that every player has their own little mini board as a part of this, but there's also a large sheet that the captain is marking progress on, and you're navigating your way around these islands.
Yeah.
And I think, and this is where the battleship component comes in. If you're ever in the same spot, I think you then end up
fighting. You can launch a torpedo.
That seems to be the impression that I've got. Yeah. Number three. Dream House from a Polish publisher called Rebel. This is a pretty straightforward looking family card game to build your dream home. It is that simple. What puts this over the edge for me is the fact that it is so simple and the art is just so, so wonderful. It's 12 rounds of building a home using these illustrated cards full of all these fancy rooms, like full of rocket ships and just wonderful kids' imagery, and you just score the points at the end. It's a no-brainer theme. It just looks and sounds great, and I just think it's going to be a great one with all members of the family.
When you said the name, I thought it must have been like a new version of Mysterium or something like that.
Oh,
it's evocative of that.
It's literally just like, you know, that whole game you play as a kid, what would be in your ideal dream home?
Yep.
Well, of course, you'd have a tree house, you'd have a lolly room, and it's all those kinds of things. And lovely art. Number four, Seventh Continent.
Oh, yeah.
You've heard about this?
Oh, yeah. Well, Leon's back that again.
Has he?
This game says that it will take up a couple of meters of table space. So this is that card exploration game. Sorry, Trent, go.
Had a bit of a preview at Gen Con, so it's not actually out yet. It looks kind of like an advanced Forbidden Island, but really it's so much more. So yes, it was a Kickstarter. It's a story game with up to 30 hours of gameplay.
Dexploration,
there's a mechanic in it to actually save your game and come back to it as well. You're trying to remove a curse from a scary island, I don't know, and you're navigating your way around these little tiles. You're building the island as you go. It can get quite large, as Garth has pointed out. And it just seems to be basically working your way through a deck of cards. But the game has this save system. There are consequences to your actions, and there are cards that provide knowledge for further explorations and activate some things on cards that might otherwise be inaccessible to you.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure, if memory serves me correct, that the Kickstarter version comes with in excess of 8,000 cards.
Mm.
So this game is going to be massive. I think it's going to be really, really unique in that save mechanic that it's got.
Because if it works,
if it works, I think it'll be really great. And look, everyone likes the exploration side of things. So as long as it has enough to keep you wanting to explore more and more, it should be onto a winner.
Yeah, and from memory, it's where, I guess, a bit like Time Stories and a bit like Pathfinder, where you bring out cards, the cards themselves are actually forming the map. There was a huge amount of unlocked stretch goals that just added more and more and more cards. Yeah, I remember seeing this one, and when Leon said he was backing it, I remember thinking, yeah.
Well, gee, I hope it's as good as Pathfinder. But the number one game that I'm looking forward to that was previewed at Gen Con was, and I'm going to completely contradict everything that I said earlier in the game.
I think I know what he's going to say.
It's Rising Sun.
Oh!
From Eric M. Lang.
Yeah.
It was announced at Gen Con. It's being billed as the, not exactly a sequel to Blood Rage, but a spiritual successor, but in feudal Japan instead of Vikings. Eric Lang has said that whereas Blood Rage took its inspiration from Risk, this Rising Sun takes its inspiration from Diplomacy.
Oh!
But with an overlay of all the Japanese mythology that you want. Plus, and this sounds really interesting, a reward for being honorable and playing honestly.
Wow!
Okay.
As long as it doesn't take its inspiration from, what's that, Reiner Knizia Samurai? or whatever his game
is. Age of War.
No,
Samurai.
Yeah.
Samurai's a good little tile-laying game.
No.
With a pasted-on Japanese theme, I admit.
Happy that it doesn't take its theme from
And I'm a sucker for the whole Japanese, you know, feudal Japan iconography, and, you know, a big fan of things like Lone Wolf and Cub.
And speaking of minis...
The minis
in this game look amazing.
I know, just like up there with the Blood Rage minis again. I've not been a big fan of Eric M. Lang's games.
Well, surely the M stands for minis, doesn't it? Minis, no. I mean, it's gotta be nothing more than that.
But based on the production values alone, based on the theme, and based on the pedigree of the game, and the fact that he does seem to be... I mean, he's quite prolific at the moment.
Yeah.
And everything he's putting out seems to be, you know, he's clearly reaching for something. And each step is a further development along this path that he's moving on in terms of complexity and, you know, combining different mechanics. So I'm hoping that this one is going to pay off. So I'm there for Rising Sun. So, look, that's just five out of the... Oh, look, probably hundreds, if not thousands, of games that were available to look at Gen Con. Perhaps one day we'll scrape the cash together to get over there, guys. Even then, I just find the whole idea of it, frankly, quite daunting. And, I mean, for me, at my venerable age, I'm quite happy to just watch the coverage, save the money, spend that money on games instead, and just watch the coverage on the internet. You know, I don't have to be there first in the queue after waiting for hours just to get a game 6 weeks ahead of some other fat guy.
And on that note, we'll come back and talk about our competition right after this.
Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Warren Zevon send lawyers, guns and money...
to Gen Con.
The sadly departed Warren Zevon, when he was asked... what the meaning of life was, he said, enjoy every sandwich.
There you go.
And we are a testament to that.
All right, we're going to talk up our competition here, Code Games competition, in order to win a bunch of, well, look, it's better than games, it's vouchers you can turn into games.
Woo!
Courtesy of...
Polymorph Games, an online gaming store whose owner is based right here in Happy Hobart, Tasmania.
And to go into the draw to win this, you just have to name the three, four?
Yeah, so we're going to have three games over three episodes. So this is episode two. And the game from last week was, well, you'll have to listen to last week's episode when it appears to get that one. But the game this week, Trent, is?
Well, I think it's just got to be a game, and this is probably the game that we've played more of in the last couple of weeks than anything else. No Thanks.
No, can you tell the listeners the name of the game?
No, thanks.
Trent, stop mucking around. We're running out of time. What is the name of the game?
Yeah, who's on first, what's on second? No Thanks is the game that we've been playing, or as we like to call it, Giss a Chip. What a great little card game.
Yeah, and look, this was one of the first games that I bought when I got into the hobby. Got put onto it by someone, and it's... like, here it is, what, 10 years later, still getting play, a tiny little box, a lot of game packed in a tiny little package, that's for sure.
And we finished the others just, like, swept the table and packed it up and just threw down No Thanks and immediately started just howling with laughter. It's a great palate cleanser. Yeah.
So, No Thanks is the name that game, the code game for this week for our Polymorph Games competition. We've got one more week to go in that. And then after that, we'll draw the winners.
You'll have to send in the names of the three code games.
Oh, yes,
games.
Of course. So how you enter is send us an email at dicemencometh@gmail.com. After you've heard all three of the games, send us an email with those three games listed. You go into the draw. Bonus entry if you put up an iTunes review and send us a message letting us know, of course.
Fantastic. But that's not the only exciting thing this week, Mark.
Quickly, Garth.
This could be the week where Instagram overtakes Facebook as our most liked social media something or other. So I just want to say again, big thanks to everyone who has had a look on our Instagram page and put a couple of likes there. Obviously liked us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Keep checking it out. We put different content on each of those platforms. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
Bye.
Enjoy every sandwich.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.